Today we're going to talk about some tests that you just can't study for. These are cardiac tests that you might have to get one day. We have a cardiologist here with us. I'm Dr. Paul Zalzo.
I'm Dr. Brad Weening. Welcome to Talking with Docs and our special recurring guest that a lot of you are familiar with, Dr. Mike Heffernan. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're going to talk about all the different tests that you might have had ordered. You might have had some of these tests. Your family doctor might be talking to you about them. We're going to talk about quickly just what they are, what they're for, and how they play a role in diagnosing and potentially treating your cardiac problem. So let's start at the beginning with the most basic one.
So easy one is the ECG or the EKG.
Okay.
So it's a 5-second snapshot, an electrical picture of your heart. It's painless, you know, get a few stickies, you put them on your chest, 10 stickies to be exact. And it's, you know, it's a simple test. It tells us what the rhythm of your heart is. It might tell us if you've had an old heart attack. At times in the middle of having chest discomfort, it might tell us that you have a blocked artery, for instance. So it's a good starting point for us, but of course it's not the end of the story.
And it shows you that cardiac waveform.
Yep.
Right? And it's the PQRST waveform.
Correct.
Right? Did you ever wonder why he didn't name it A, B, C, D, E? I did.
Okay, so you looked into it. Okay, here we go.
I thought you would have known this, Brad. It's a Dutch physiologist in the early 1900s, Willem Einthoven.
Yeah.
He won a Nobel Prize, by the way.
Okay.
And then he was doing the electrocardiograph and the waveform. A, B, C, D, E was already taken by someone a few years prior who did a mechanical waveform, looked at pressure. So he couldn't use those, so he randomly started with the P.
I was going to say, like, why did he not go to F then? Like,
I guess he was worried that guy, he wanted to give that guy some room to tag on a bit more, just
awful.
In case.
That's
I'm going to give you a bit of room and start a P.
And I guess the main shortcoming of the EKG is that it's a picture. So just like if you're taking a picture versus a movie, a lot can happen between the pictures that is relevant.
Absolutely.
And
it's a 5-second picture at that period of time.
Right.
At Eindhoven's original ECG, people had to put their feet in a bucket of water.
Jesus. And he won the Nobel Prize. Probably because he was cleaning their feet at the same time.
Could be.
My machine does two things.
Okay. Okay, so that's number one. So what's number two, Mike?
So stress tests. A lot of people have had stress tests. So these are plain old exercise stress tests. People will be familiar with them. I think it's a low-risk procedure. Right. We pop you on a treadmill. We ask you to exercise as best as possible. Stress tests are standardized. We know we're not making it up as we go along. There's a standard place where we put the leads, and there's a standard kind of ramping up in terms of the speed and the grade of the treadmill. And for a stress test, what we're looking for is, are you going to develop chest discomfort?
Okay.
And when you're developing chest discomfort, we look at the ECG tracing, because if there's a blocked artery, we hope to see that there might be an abnormality in that ECG, which will then kind of answer the question as to whether is your chest pain coming from your heart or is it coming from something else?
Okay, now we have a lot of patients who have hip and knee arthritis.
Yep.
So you get someone that comes to you and you're like, okay, we need to do a stress test, and they look and they laugh.
Right.
And they say, there's no way, Dr. Heffernan, my knees are so bad, there's no way that I can do the stress test. What do you do for those people?
So we can get around that. There's a chemical stress test we can do.
Okay.
Patients lie flat on a table. Here we just kind of give them an injection of something over 4 minutes, and it opens up the arteries of the heart. If there happens to be a blocked artery there, it doesn't open as well as the others. It causes something called coronary steel.
Okay.
And with some imaging, we have to have imaging with that.
Right.
With some imaging, we can detect whether or not the person that can't exercise actually has a blocked artery.
Okay, now an ECG or EKG, that's really low risk or no risk almost.
Correct.
I think. Maybe you get a reaction from the stickies, I guess.
Stickies or a hairy chest. And pulling
chest.
Them off.
Yeah. Yeah, that can hurt. However, with the stress test, I mean, I'm wondering, isn't there a chance that you could induce a heart attack or someone could have a heart attack doing the stress test?
So that's the irony, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we kind of talk about that in the office sometimes. It's like, well, we're gonna put you on the treadmill, and we're trying to make something happen.
Right.
And something bad happen.
Right.
It's not every day you go to work and that's what you're actually looking for, but that's what we do. The risk is 1 in 10,000 of having something like that happen.
Okay.
So it's low risk, but it's also why when you're having a stress test done, it has to be at a center that's reputable.
Yes.
So there is something like a crash cart and defibrillators and trained staff that can respond to the 1 in 10,000 if it happens to you.
Have you seen that happen? Yeah.
I absolutely have. You know, when you've been doing this long enough, bad things happen, right?
Right.
Yeah. What I would say is actually there's a third evolving one. And as a Canadian and as a Toronto sports fan, I find that when I watch the Blue Jays last night.
Yes.
Or the Leafs kind of all the time.
Starting tonight.
This causes a lot of stress. And I said to my wife, I said, I guarantee if I measure my blood pressure right now, my blood pressure is up, my resting heart rate is up. It is stressful.
It is.
Man, oh man, it's stressful.
So, you can do that instead of just put someone on a treadmill.
We're just going to show you, game three.
Fingers crossed, game four causes no stress. Okay, so that's number two. Let's go to number three.
You know what I should tell you is, so this stress test has an accuracy of around 70%.
Okay.
So not perfect. But cheap and easy, right? And so now as we move up in the test, the accuracy improves. The expense of the test improves depending upon your region. So the next one would be stress echo for us.
And so everyone's not getting a stress echo. So this is someone who's kind of going down a path of diagnosis, and then you say, okay, well now we need this extra piece of information.
Right, and the physician, it has to choose wisely.
Right.
And so, you listen to the story, you have a pretty good idea. We call it the pre-test probability of what something might be going, what's going on. If the pre-test probability is really relatively low, you can use an ECG and a stress ECG. But if it's starting to bump up, it's like, I'm not entirely sure. This is a 50-50 chance this could be something bad. Then you need to use a test that's going to be much more accurate and a high sensitivity and specificity.
Okay, so how does that play out, the stress echo?
So the stress echo plays out where you have a resting echocardiogram. And so what that is, that's an ultrasound of your heart. It takes about 30 or 40 minutes to do. We can look at all the walls of the heart. We look at the structure. We look at how strong your heart is. We look at how well it relaxes. We can see all the valves of the heart.
Right.
There's lots of information we get from the resting echo. That all gets done. And then we pop you on a treadmill or a supine bike. We talked about this a little bit before we started filming.
Which is crazy. I did not know. I asked them, like, well, what is
it? So I'll do the treadmill first. So we get you on the treadmill, like a routine stress test. Mm-hmm. So you exercise to peak exercise. And then the moment you hit your peak exercise, we flop you onto a bed quickly. And a highly trained sonographer then has to capture all the images of the heart at peak exercise. We ask patients to hold their breath for about 30 seconds in the time that they really want to breathe because they've just been exercising. But we've really centers all around the world. We have this down to a fine art.
Stop, drop, and echo.
Yeah.
Stop, drop, and echo.
Okay.
And so what we're looking for is, at peak exercise, did one of the walls stop moving? Or did one of the walls really slow down and not move well at all? That tells us there's a blocked artery there.
Okay.
And then
the reason that is because the blood supply essentially is not there, so you can't work that muscle.
Right, so it was fine at rest.
Right.
You didn't ask the heart to do very much.
Right.
But push the heart to 140 beats per minute. Now all of a sudden, blood's not getting through that blocked artery well. The muscle starts to really feel it and then really stops moving.
And presumably you need the resting echo because if they've had a previous heart attack, they might have a wall motion abnormality.
Yep.
So you get that at baseline in the resting echo and then compare it to the stress echo.
Because correct.
The same wall won't be moving, but if it's a new wall that's not moving, that's something dynamic that's going on right now.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
So that's a stress echo. And we can do it on a supine bike, we can do it on a treadmill. There are a variety of mechanisms to do that. So that has an accuracy, we're in the order of 85 to 90% now. So that's fantastic, and we've not put anything inside you.
Right.
Not fished any wires up into your heart, non-invasive, low risk. Another good non-invasive way of looking at the coronary arteries is a virtual angiogram, so a CT coronary angiogram.
Okay.
Now you're using x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
The chance of having missing something is exceedingly low. This is a really good test to rule out a problem. We get some very nice images and reconstruction of the three main coronary arteries. If it's normal, it truly is normal. I think there are times where the CT coronary angiogram might say, oh, I think the blockage is moderate to severe. That's when we won't really know unless we kind of go inside and have a good look.
Is that with dye, the CT angio, or without dye?
It is with dye.
With dye. So it's a little bit more invasive now because you're injecting someone with a dye.
You're injecting contrast dye.
And you could have an allergic reaction to that contrast
Absolutely.
Dye.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And this is also the difference between the cardiac CT or the CT or calcium score, right? You're just looking at the soft plaques. You're not having the dye, and that's why you can be tricked by that calcium score. When someone talks about, oh, I had a CT and
Absolutely.
My calcium score was zero and I'm fine, even though my cholesterol is 5,000, you're like,
yep.
well, it's not really like that. And this would catch that.
This would catch that.
Right.
Yeah, because the soft plaques are the ones we're really worried about.
Because they're unstable.
They're unstable. Yeah.
Okay.
And then the gold standard, the referee that's going to kind of blow the whistle and say this puck's past the goal line, is the invasive coronary angiogram. And so most often when we do that, we put a small catheter through the radial artery in your wrist. In the old days, we used to go through the leg a lot. But
why did we change?
Well, more convenient for the patient. To go through the wrist.
Sure.
Definitely. So more, it's harder for the operator.
Sure,
you have
sure.
to be much more skilled as an invasive cardiologist to go through the wrist, because catheters were all designed to go through the leg.
Smaller vessel, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a small vessel. And so we fish a small catheter up into the top of the heart, and we squirt some dye down the three arteries of the heart, and all of its side branches, of course. And then that gives us a roadmap right away. Problem, not a problem. The minute you do that first shot, you know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So these are all sort of tests that are basically trying to determine if there is some coronary artery disease, to see if the muscle of the heart isn't getting enough blood flow and therefore not working right. Now, in terms of sort of arrhythmias and things like that, what tests are we now kind of talking about?
Right. So that test called a Holter monitor or an arrhythmia monitor. Holter monitors are, they've really changed a lot, or they're starting to change. So the typical Holter I think most people would be familiar with is we put a series of leads on your chest. The leads are connected to a box that you often just kind of wear on your hip. And that will record all your heartbeats over the course of however long we book this for. We have 24, 48, and 72 hour Holters. Everyone has about 100,000 heartbeats a day, and we count every single one of them.
Right.
And we're looking for, are you in a normal rhythm? Are there times when you're in a fast rhythm or a slow rhythm? Are there times when your heart paused? Did it just not do anything for 3 seconds, 5 seconds? And we're correlating all of that with a diary. So we ask patients to keep a really specific diary. And if, you know, for instance, at 7:16 in the morning, did you have a racing heart? Be very specific. We're gonna go to 7:16 on the monitor.
Right.
What happened with your heart at the time? I can tell you about half the time on average over, you know, doing this for many years, people write stuff and it's not a rhythm disturbance. They're feeling something else in their chest. But the other half, they write something and yep, lo and behold, there is something there. And then we can provide some guidance. Many times it's actually nothing to worry about. Extra beats from the upper or the bottom chamber of the heart. Occasionally it is something to worry about, and then we have to deal with it.
Is the thought behind 3 days is that most things will show up like once or twice in 3 days, like as opposed, because you could theoretically have 3 days of normal
you
rhythm and then
can.
Still have a problem that could be caught on Holter, right?
Yeah, so you ask the patient, you go, how often do you get this? Every day? Yep, every day. Okay, so am I going to book this for 3 days?
Right.
There's a good chance you're going to feel something. However, if a patient goes, you know what, I get this, you know, infrequently, we have a monitor for 2 weeks. There are some monitors that we can, you know, patients can wear for a month. They're not wires though. You know, we're really moving to an era where you can just put a small patch and to stick a patch onto the chest. It's much easier for the patient to wear. And we can record all that data over the course of, you know, 2 weeks or
And so
or
in your month. In your logbook, you have to put the time down, right?
You have
so
to like put the time, like, date and time.
Yeah, like Brad talked about kale in the video. 7:15, and then you look at my echo, and you're like, look at this, it's
look
beating
at
so
this.
Fast, and you skipped a few beats.
Because I don't want to eat kale.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
The
so,
Jays bullpen started to pitch.
Yeah.
So that's Holter monitoring, and I guess for the really infrequent stuff, there are devices available, Apple Watches, for instance, commercially available, something called Cardia.
Nice.
Here in Canada, it's about $100 off of Amazon. They're fantastic, and they're single channel, medical grade ECGs. So for something that you have infrequently, you can capture your own ECG.
Right.
And then, so we do have patients do that. And they find things like atrial fibrillation, which increases their risk for stroke. And they say, hey doc, you know, this is what I had, and changes the course of management completely.
Wow.
All from wearable technology. Okay.
Yeah.
So that is the Holter monitor that is going to be looked. It's basically an ECG over a long period of time.
It like is.
The first test we talked about, but over a long
over period. A long period of time.
Okay. And any other test you want to mention?
And maybe just probably the echo.
Regular
echo apart from stress. It's something that, you know, we do all the time.
Right.
It's the mainstay for us. Well, you know, I can use this really old technology.
Yes, this is all beyond history and physical exam.
Right, history, physical exam, and a good physician with a stethoscope can pick up a lot of clues as to what might be going on, particularly as it relates to valvular heart disease. But echo is fantastic for that. So there's no guessing. We have great imaging of the heart, so we can look for structure. We can see, do you have a leaky valve? Do you have a narrowed valve? How leaky? How narrow? Is it to the point where actually we need to do something with this? If you've had a big heart attack, how big?
Right.
Is it so big that you meet criteria for us putting a little defibrillator inside? So something that's going to shock you of a lethal heart rhythm. So echo provides a whole host of information that helps guide us.
And super safe, that's ultrasound. Again, it's a combination of just regular imaging ultrasound and Doppler, the Doppler looking at flow.
Yep.
Ultrasound is non-invasive, non-harmful, no radiation.
Yeah.
No risk with that.
No, there is one thing with echo, and I think more and more people see this now. It's become a standard of care. When for a lot of times, you know, the echo lab may say, hey, we want to inject this thing called contrast, where there are really little microbubbles. And so safe. Mm-hmm. So we inject these microbubbles when we do the echo. It goes into the chamber of the heart. It improves the imaging quality significantly.
Right.
And so for a variety of reasons, it can be really tough to get good images for people, depending on, you know, how close their rib space is. You know, you can imagine we're going through a lot of things. We're going through tissue, rib, yeah. muscle, bone, to try and get images of the heart. And so adding a little bit of contrast, it's not a dye, but these little micro bubbles provide a
That's to bounce the sound back in the flow, so you can get a better flow reading, right?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, so those are some cool tests that we talked about. We talked about EKG, stress test, stress echo, CT angio, gold standard of catheterization, which is kind of like that video review in New York when the play, is he safe, is he out?
Right.
Holter monitors, and just your plain old echo.
Unlike the New York review, the cath is always right, though.
I would agree. Sometimes you're like, this for sure is going to overturn. Nope. And then otherwise you're like, oh, never get overturned.
I think I have more cameras than we got at home. More screens.
Sure.
Now you know all about the cardiac test maybe that you're getting. So if you like this video, please like it, subscribe to our channel, and share it with someone that you know is going through some of these tests.
So don't get stressed if you got a stress test coming up. We just want to echo that fact.
Oh my.
Wow.
Remember, you are in charge of your own health.
We'll see you next time. And thanks to Dr. Heffernan for joining us.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Go, Jason.